Hi, my name is Terry Whalen, and I'd like to welcome you to this call this afternoon. I'm very excited to have this opportunity to be talking to our Christian marketing expert, Sally Stewart. If you don't know about me, I'm a publisher at Intermedia Publishing Group, and I've written about 60 books over the years for a lot of different publishers. But I'm delighted this afternoon to have Sally Stewart with us to give us the inside scoop about writing for the Christian market. Sally, I used to say Aloha, Oregon, but now I don't see that anymore. I guess Tigert, Oregon. Is that right? Is that how you say that, Sally?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Has been writing for years, full-time, for the last 27. She has also put out 26 editions of the Christian Writer's Market Guide, the only market guide that specifically targets the Christian market. In addition, she has published a dozen other books and countless articles and columns. As a marketing columnist for the Christian Communicator, the Advanced Christian Writer, and the Oregon Christian Writer, she is considered the leading authority on the Christian market. She's in demand as a conference speaker nationwide. Sally is the mother of three and the grandmother of eight. Sally, welcome to the call.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, hey, I just got my Christian Writer's Market Guide. What do you suggest, Sally, that people do when they first pull their market guide out of the package there?
Well, I would say as soon as you have the opportunity or can make that opportunity, just sit down with it and spend some time. If you're new to the guide, it's really very logically laid out, but it takes a little time to sort of catch on to how it works. And even if you have been subscribing or getting the guide for a while, there's always some new things. And I suggest that you start with the introduction, because in the introduction I tend to let you know what any of the new features would be for the year, as well as how many new publications or publishers there are, those kinds of new statistics that kind of catch you up with what's happening in the industry as well.
Yeah, that's terrific. And you know, I guess what I'd like to start here with is we've got a ton of questions. We've got like 100 questions, and I've tried to organize them into different categories here so we can sort of go in a progressive way. Is there anything you'd like to say about what's happened in the Christian market just in general here? I mean, you know, we're living in challenging economic times. You read it in the newspaper all the time and that kind of thing. What is that really doing to Christian magazines, Christian book publishers, all those different people that are writing for the Christian market? You're in touch with that kind of information probably more than anybody else out there.
Well, I think the changes are, we're seeing probably the greatest changes with periodicals, in that it's very difficult for periodicals to stay in business these days. We just tend not to subscribe like we used to all those magazines. And I was just checking before we went on the air here about how many periodicals either went out of business last year that I discovered in preparing the 2011 market guide, or how many book or either went out of business or quit taking freelance. And there were actually 60 periodicals that fell into that category.
Wow.
And in the book, with the book publishers, they tend not to go out of business as quickly, unless they're just a very small startup company, and those tend to have a poor track record until they really get going. But there were 27 book publishers that either went out of business, or primarily those that just quit taking freelance because they're not able to deal. A lot of times they just don't have the personnel to deal with those unsolicited manuscripts.
Wow, 27 publishers and 60 magazines. Now, I mean, you and I have been in this business a long time and understand some things. It's about the magazine market that some people probably don't understand. What elements makes these publications go out of business? Because, I mean, I've written for a lot of magazines, Christian magazines that don't exist anymore, and I'm sure you have too. So,
Well, I think it you know, comes down to the economical, that they are not getting the subscribers that they did, not getting the advertisers, because people aren't subscribing to the magazine, so the advertisers are not putting their money into it. And of course, a lot of Christian publications, they're sponsored by either denominations or Christian organizations, and those organizations are struggling economically as well, not getting the contributions and the funds coming in that they've had in the past. So it has kind of a long trail that leads back to why they end up going out of business. And what's happening with a lot of them, I'm seeing, is just from the progression from year to year, is that they tend to start first by cutting back the number of issues that they do, or the number of pages, or both, and then eventually they end up going online, which seems to be the most economical way for a magazine to continue. So that's kind of the process that they go through, I think.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I was reading today in the introduction, as a matter of fact, to the 26th issue here, the 2011 Christian Writers Market Guide. You were talking about how a lot of these magazines and publishers are just not even listing their fax numbers anymore. They're doing away with fax. They're even doing away with their addresses, is what you were saying.
Yes, they a lot of them, they don't want the phone numbers listed, usually first, and then they don't want the fax numbers. And I think a lot of them are, you know, going from having the, you know, regular fax number to using the online faxes and that sort of thing. But they're, I guess generally it's making it a little bit more difficult for the author to, or writer to get in contact directly with those publications. But the majority of them now are dealing almost exclusively with email, both for subscriptions and, I mean, not subscriptions, but submissions, and also just the day-to-day correspondence with the writers that are writing for them.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me as I look at it. I can understand why they don't want their phone numbers in there. I mean, we would like to be able to phone up these people and get them on the phone, but a lot of times it's very difficult to get these editors and agents and different folks on the telephone, and particularly if you don't know who they are. In terms of general marketing things, Sally, what would you, you know, we have a lot of, questions, people wondering where would you start? If you were brand new, you've never written for the Christian Market before, where do you suggest people start?
Well, I generally recommend that people go to a Christian Writers Conference. I think that's the best way to get the most information in the shortest amount of time, and to just sort of get a sense of what the whole industry is about. And that happens most easily, I think, even better than just reading books. You know, it's having those contacts with other successful writers, editors, agents, just on a one-to-one basis. It makes a big difference in understanding how the whole process works.
Yeah, and you have a growing list of all different kinds of conferences and everything in the market guide that people can learn about them. Where do you suggest they go to a big one or a little one, or what do you suggest in that area?
Well, I would suggest if you're a brand new writer to start with those conferences that focus on instruction. Conferences kind of tend into two groups. There's those that focus on instruction and will not probably have editors, or at least not many editors or agents there. But then once you get to start getting some things written, and particularly if you have books, then it's a good idea to go to a bigger conference where there is a larger number of editors and agents, because it's those, as I said, those one-on-one contacts with those professionals that often makes a difference in whether you sell or don't sell. And a lot of these days, when we have publishers that say they're not accepting unsolicited manuscripts, many of those are sending editors to conferences looking for writers. So they're still looking for writers. It's just that they don't have the personnel usually, or the time and finances to deal with those unsolicited manuscripts. So they look for good potential writers at those conferences.
And there's there's a whole volume thing that goes on with those unsolicited manuscripts that people new to the business don't really understand, do they, Sally? So.
No, there are so many manuscripts that are out there circulating, and so it's very often, as I said, those personal contacts that sort of get you to the head of the line, because they just really want to know who you are and what you're all about, and being able to see them face to face, and very often have an appointment with them or a chance to talk to them over a meal. They really get a sense of who you are and what your vision is, and you know, what your mission is with what you're having to write. And very often they'll share that vision and look for opportunities to help you along. And sometimes it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, sometimes I think writers go to a conference and think, well, I'm going to meet an editor, an agent, and they're going to, you know, snatch me up and make me successful. But sometimes if you talk to writers, they may have run into that particular editor or agent two or three conferences over two or three or four years even before a book actually comes out, or even an article. Usually articles come more quickly, but with a book that takes a great deal of patience to be a writer.
It does. And those are all things that people have to learn when they come to this business. But my sense is that with the Christian market, particularly because of our faith and being united around Christ, each one of these different entities, whether it's books or magazines or agents, they're all actively looking for quality material, wouldn't you say?
Yes, yeah, they are. And even though does that say that they're not, you know, open to unsolicited material, are still needing those writers. I mean, they can't really function without writers to write the book. So they're always looking for people who have a good story to tell, or, either in fiction or nonfiction. So,
I mean, you get the idea sometimes if you get a stack of pink rejection slips or whatever color they are, that nobody wants my stuff, and that's really not true. That's not the message that particularly the editors and agents want to give to people.
Yeah, I think the thing that writers who fail, the reason they do fail is because they're simply not persistent enough. You know, if you really feel that the Lord has called you to write, then it's your job to write and to get it out there and to keep it going as long as you have someplace that's a potential market for that particular book or article or whatever it is. But because it isn't... a little more difficult to get published these days, writers tend to give up much too easily. They think if they get one or two or three rejections, then their material must not be any good. But it's just a matter of finding the right place. I've used this analogy at conferences for years, but it's like if I told the ladies who are listening to go home and make a dress and go door to door trying to find somebody to buy that dress. That's not a very good way to sell dresses or manuscripts either. You really need to do your homework and make sure that you're submitting to appropriate places.
Now, by doing their homework, does that mean that they can just open up the market guide and go to something and then fire it off from there?
No, the topical listings in the market guide will direct them to potential markets for the particular type of book or article or story that they have. But each of those publishers puts out their own, for the most part, maybe a few exceptions, but the majority of them put out their own writer's guidelines, which can, of course, be much more detailed than what I have room for in the book. And I suggest that they read the listings, send for the guidelines. If it's a book, send for the catalog and kind of see where if there's a spot in the catalog for what they have to offer, or with magazines, get sample copies and read them cover to cover. Get more than one issue if you can, and try to find something that matches up. You want to, I've told writers, it's like we meet a lot of people in our day-to-day lives, and some of them we make an instant connection with and get along with great and maybe have lifelong friends, and others we may have a short conversation with and never see or speak to them again. So what you're looking for, the same way with publications, you want to find publications that match who you are, what your message is, you know, the the feeling and depth that you have for the experiences that they're having, so that you can meet the needs of the readers of that particular publication. So it's kind of an ongoing process, and I just encourage writers to spend some time with their market guide and get a feel for what the different publications are about, because it's really a matter of matching up to the right spot for the particular piece that they might have.
Yeah, it's not something you learn overnight. That's for sure here. Now, what you know, Larry has a good question here. What are some of the easiest publications for novice writers to get published in?
I think, of course, devotionals are a good way to start. There's a section in the market guide on devotionals. Those are short, about 250 words for the most part. They're short pieces and fairly easy to do, and they use a lot of them since they're usually daily. The publications have to have a lot of them. Another good place is Sunday school take-home papers. There are take-home papers for all ages, from nursery school through senior adults, and those are tend to be shorter pieces, probably 800 to 1,000 words, sometimes even shorter than that. So they're fairly easy to do. They're on a broad number of topics. I mean, it can be almost any sort of Christian-related topic, anything that you think people are interested in, or things you struggle with, or things you can identify with. And they don't pay a lot, but most of them do pay. And they're looking for a lot of material because they tend to be weekly. So they have weekly papers, so they need a lot of material. And I've had editors from Sunday school take-home papers contact me and said, I'm desperate for writers because they're just not getting enough material to fit. And a lot of times it's the length, because they are shorter. People are sending them longer pieces that just don't fit. So that's why it's important to see the market guide or their guidelines as to what their length requirements are, because those tend to be pretty strict. I mean, they just have so much room. So,
well, boy, that's what we like to hear. That's what we like to hear as writers, that they're desperate for us. I think that sounds good. You know, I like to hear that kind of stuff. That's good. But isn't it typical that most people, when they start, they think they're going to do a 100,000 word novel or a 50,000 word nonfiction book or something? When here, what you and I have just been talking about are these shorter 500-word, you know, 300-word devotionals or whatever, and those can really have huge impact. I know this last year I had a devotion published in the Upper Room that went out to millions of people, and it's just amazing what can happen from something like that.
Yeah, it really is. Those devotionals do tend to have a very wide distribution, and so if you have a message on your heart that you want to get out there, that's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, and it's so overlooked. It's just and talk to people a little bit, Sally, about what happens if you do get published in magazines. That's more than just experience, right? It helps you get to the book thing that you want to do, right?
Yeah, I think I always encourage writers to start with writing for publications, even though they have a book that they want to do. It helps you learn a lot about the industry, for one thing. It helps you to learn to write to the specified length that they want. It helps you learn to meet deadlines, which is important. You can use all those magazine sales are, you know, can go on your resume, your list of credits. And these days, because editors have to be more selective, they tend to look for writers who are have that track record, where they've been out there, and particularly if you're getting published on the topic of your book, it helps so that you can begin to create a reputation for someone who writes about a certain topic or does a certain type of material, and all that's very helpful when you go to write a book, as well as just the experience of writing and learning how to put the words on paper and how to format dialogue and all those things that we tend not to know unless we are writers. So it's a sort of a learning curve, I think, that leads to that book. But I never encourage people to start with a book.
Yeah, no, that makes That makes really sound sense to me. And, you know, getting to a solid conference like you were talking about, so that you're able to meet those people, it's who you know as much as what you know oftentimes, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? And, you know, we've really got great questions here from people, and so I want to dig into some of those. You know, people always want to know what, like Lou Ann asked, who are the best Christian publishers and agents? How do you figure out what that is?
Well, I think people are always coming to me with, you know, say I have a book, you know, who are the top five or publishers I should send it to? Well, it all comes down to using those topical lists and finding the publishers that are appropriate for your material. And with 500 publishers, 400 to 500 publishers, book publishers listed in the market guide, it's pretty hard to, you know, say these five are the best for everybody. So it's a matter of finding out. What you can do is at the end of the book publishers section in the guide, it will tell you which publishers are putting out the most books. And so those will tend to be, we would at least assume, would be some of the most successful publishers. Another place in the guide, and that's in that same section, I list which publishers have gotten the most books on the bestseller list in the past year. And so that kind of, and it's broken down by category. So the, you know, the best fiction or the best Christian living or children's books or so forth. And that's not a, you know, cut and dried guide, but at least it kind of gives you an idea who's publishing the best books. So, you know, that would be a guide for you as well.
Yeah, no, those are probably some overlooked pages in your marketing guide, and I'm sure you put a lot of research into compiling that information every year so that it's in there for people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of all different kinds of questions here. So let's talk about you know, agents for a minute here. You didn't used to have many agents in the Christian market, did you?
No. In fact, when I started there, I don't think there was such a thing as a Christian agent. the publishers were not, I mean, they were pretty leery of anybody who said they were agents, even back when the agents started this sort of slow movement into Christian publishing. Publishers tended to be a little bit leery about who they were and whether they were going to get in the way of the relationship between the publisher and the author. But over the years now, it's as Christian publishing has become more sophisticated, I think it's the need for agents has increased as we've had more and more, you know, very successful authors that are getting their books on the New York Times bestseller list and that sort of thing. But people tend to think that every publisher demands an agent, but typically a beginning author or a first-time book writer will have a difficult time finding an agent that wants to take them on. Even though we do have Christian agents, and I don't know, the market guide lists about let me see, I had it written down here. Well, there are about 80 literary agents listed in the current edition.
Oh, wow.
But I've had as many as 120, and it's a matter of some agents not being successful enough to stay in business with it, and some that because they have so many clients already, they can't take on any more. So one of the problems with agents now is that there simply are not enough of them to meet the needs of all the Christian authors who are looking for agents. So it's kind of a difficult situation, and so the agents will tend to look for authors who have that track record, have, you know, written other books or have some really good credits in there for their article writing.
But like you were saying, do many of the Christian publishers out there require that you have an agent to get their attention?
I think there are about, I counted this year, I think there are about 12 or so that, not, there may be a few more added to that list since I, you know, finished the market guide. But One of the things that people will notice in, I think, the last couple of issues in the Market Guide, if they haven't seen it or if they have seen it, is that in the topical listings, at right under the topic name, there will be a section of publications listed that have an A, the small letter A in front of them, and that means those are publications that require an agent. And so, and then all the rest underneath that, and there's usually not more than half a dozen or so under each topic, sometimes less than that, sometimes a few more. But the rest of them are all open to submissions directly from the author.
Wow, that's great. Now let's talk for a minute here before we get too far about the Christian Writers Market Guide. If you're listening to this recording on the webcast, you'll see that there's a button there that says Christian Writers Market Guide that'll take you right to Sally's site. And Sally, you have a how do you explain your arrangement where that if you can lock in your price? How do you explain that whole part of it?
Okay, well, we have a sort of an automatic subscription system where if you want to sign up to get it automatically every year as soon as it comes out, then you can freeze the price at the current level no matter how much the price goes up in the future. And so there's a place on the website to sign up for that, and you can ask for the current edition, but also to be signed up for getting the future editions of that. And the book just comes out the first of the year with an invoice, and you have 30 days to pay it. And as I said, the price is frozen at whatever level it happens to be at the time you sign up. So I have people signed up from anywhere from $16.95 to $24.99. So
wow.
Those that signed up early were very happy that they did that.
I'm sure.
But that we have, I have a good number of a lot of authors who do that. In fact, I just got, we got about 1,500 individual orders out just in the last couple of weeks. So.
Wow, that's great. Now you, but you have a, so they can lock in on the price,
mm-hmm.
and don't you have a system somewhere or another where there's openings for the older price? How does that work? I forget. Or not.
Well, we have, you can buy last year's edition at a reduced price.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking
yeah,
of.
On the website
just,
as well.
I don't want to put you on the spot here. I'm just
well,
trying
okay.
to think of what the rules are. I can't even remember, you know. So.
Well, sometimes I don't remember either, so we could be in trouble
we're
here.
We're in real trouble here. Now what about the, there was a change with when you changed publishers here in the last couple of years and went to Tyndale. And what's happening with the with if say somebody wants the disc part of the Market Guide?
Okay, when Tyndale took it over, it was their decision that they didn't want to continue. We provided a CD that came in the book with a previous publisher, and Tyndale House decided that they didn't want to do that, but they did make it okay for me to offer those or provide those. And this year, actually, we have gone from providing the CD to the automatic customers. At least last year, the automatic customers got them, just came with the book. But this year, just as technology moves along, we're trying to move along with it. So this year, instead of the CD, we're offering a free download of the Market Guide plus a section of about 2,200 Christian resources for writers that they can just, once they buy the book, and they can go and download the Market Guide and those resources.
So do they pay extra for the download, or how does that work?
No. If they're an automatic customer, they get it free. If others want to, they pay an additional. They have to buy the Market Guide and then the book, and then they have, I think they pay an extra $6 for the download.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, I have found that download to be incredibly valuable. If you're, let's say you're going to write to a publication or whatever, you can just cut and paste the name rather than typing it in. I don't know, maybe I'm lazy here. But
I think that's the way that a lot of people use it.
And it's a great resource here. So, if you don't have the Christian Writers Market Guide, let's talk about the amount of changes from year to year. I know that's an issue, and even though I haven't been with Howard Books for, what, 3-4 years now, I still get, every now and then, I get somebody submitting something to me as the acquisitions editor at Howard Books, which I am no longer, and they still mail it to me, and it, I can tell they're using an old Christian Writers Market Guide when they do that. So what percentage of the information in the listings changes from year to year? Why should I buy a new guide?
Well, I think as far as each listing, there are some, very rarely do I not have some change to each listing in the guide.
Wow.
Some of them have pretty dramatic changes. I mean, I have some that go from not paying to paying or from paying to not paying, and a lot of them that, you know, change addresses, change emails. Emails seem to change quite a lot. And since those emails are so important to your the submissions and the correspondence that you have with the publisher, that's important as well. One of the other things is that if you're not getting the guide every year, you're missing the new editions. Now, this year we had about 30 new book publishers and about 30 new magazines, which is a smaller number than we have had in the past, but I think it's a reflection of the economy. We've had as many as 80 new magazines in a year when times were good for magazines. So you just miss out on all those new potential markets as well. So, but it's a changing market, particularly the last few years. It just seems like it's totally or continually in flux, and a lot of things happening that we need to keep up with. And like you say, it's not good for your reputation if you're sending submissions to publishers or editors who have been gone for a number of years.
Yeah, that really keeps you up on it by getting the new market guide every year and then faithfully using the information that's in there. That's terrific. Now, what kind of, speaking of new, you said there were 30 new magazines in this particular 2011 issue of the Christian Writers Market Guide. What kind of opportunity is there for writers, whether they know about this or not, when there's a new publication? What happens there?
Well, when you hear about a new publication, it's always a good idea, to, if it's something that fits with what you're writing, is to get something off to them as soon as possible, because older publications tend to have their a stable of authors where that they can go to because they know that they write a certain type of material and they understand the magazine, and so they will make assignments to those people. But those new publications don't have that stable of authors, so they're looking to fill their stable, and so they're going to be on the lookout for writers who can write for the particular, whatever the focus happens to be of that publication. So it's important that the author make his contact as soon as possible to let them know. And then sometimes it's just a matter of even writing to them and saying that you know, just heard about them and because they fit so well with what you're writing, that you would be interested in assignments. But probably the best way to get those assignments is to start sending the material that does fit what they need, and so they'll pick up on that immediately.
Yeah, no, that's all real great advice. There's tons of opportunity, it seems like to me, when there's a new publication out there to form a new relationship with that editor with the right kind of material.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book area of the market here, Kevin asked a really good question. For example, is it possible to become a full-time freelance Christian fiction writer in today's market?
Well, it would be great if it was, but it's very, very difficult. There are very few writers who are able to go, you know, full-time. Most of the writers that tend not to have another regular job in addition to their writing will tend to do things like substitute teaching or writing, driving school buses or things like that, because I think the cash flow with as a writer can be very difficult, because you write a book and it takes you several months, and then it's months before you see any royalties or that sort of thing. So it's just a very difficult problem to become a full-time writer. You have to be very productive and Generally, it's writers who have not just one book that's been published, but any number of books that they're still collecting royalties from. So what it comes down to generally is having enough income coming from royalties or something where you're not, the money is not coming directly in response to the work that you're doing, so that you have money coming in on a regular basis, maybe, you know, writing columns where you get a monthly payment for that, or you get, you know, paid weekly or whatever it might be. But it's just very difficult to be a full-time writer.
Yeah, and I mean, this particular question was about fiction, because it seems like there's all kinds of people that are writing a novel that they want to get out there into the market, and they want to find the perfect spot for that. But what you said there really translates over into the person that's writing nonfiction books as well, right?
Yeah, it really doesn't matter whether it's fiction or nonfiction. I think with fiction, if you're a very prolific writer, you know, you might have a little better chance at going full time, but it is difficult. And I don't encourage people to, you know, quit their day job. And when you're starting writing, you really need a good long history as a writer, and have built a reputation, and those relationships with editors and that sort of thing are all a very important part of the process.
Now, speaking of fiction here, Beth asked a really good question. She says, I'm trying to break into the YA Christian fiction market, but so few publishers will accept an unsolicited proposal, let alone review a manuscript. What do you say to somebody that wants to do that kind of thing?
Well, it is difficult, as she indicates. And I think the YA market is particularly difficult, because I've noticed over the years that publishers tend to sort of shy away from that genre, because young adults and when it comes down to it, usually it's teenagers who are reading the YA material, and they tend to want to read adult material. You know, they don't like having this category just for them. So that's why the YA market has been particularly difficult, I think, over the years, is because it's hard to get kids to want to read that group of books that are written specifically for them. I was just out with my granddaughter yesterday, and she told me she read a lot, but she reads fantasy. And I think a lot of the teens tend to read fantasy too, so it's a tough market to break into.
Well, and why would you say it is? What's your guess, at least, as far as why it is in the Christian market? Because in the general market, you know, YA is exploding. If you really look at you know, Harry Potter and Stephanie Meyer, and you know who else over there in the YA category. You kind of wonder what's going on with the Christian market.
Yeah, and I think even though we do have a growing market for fantasy and science fiction in the Christian market, which was something I thought we would never see, I guess the books that are generally being put out by the Christian YA publishers are not competing with with the Harry Potter and the other ones that you mentioned.
Right.
That it's a whole different category. So I'm not really sure what the answer to that is.
Okay, I thought you'd have something really profound for me this afternoon.
Yeah, sorry. A lot of profound, I guess.
Well, this is great, though. This is great information here. Now, another really good question that Susan asked, and I think this plays into other people's questions about the book market, is she says, if I present a book proposal to an agent or a publisher like a year or two ago, but she's improved it, can you go back to that same agent or the publisher? They kind of like my concept. They said something about it at a writer's conference. I've really gotten it together now. What do you think?
Well, if they have just spoken with an editor at a conference about it, and have not actually submitted anything to them, then I would say certainly, they could follow up on that. Generally speaking, the editors that I've spoken with say, if they reject something, they don't want to see it again. Is basically what it comes down to, because a lot of times it has nothing to do with the quality of the writing. It may not be an appropriate match for them. It may be that they have something else that's too similar to it. There's a lot of reasons for rejection, and I think the fact that the writing is not good enough is just a very small part of that. There are just so many other elements. Sometimes it's just financial, that they can't afford to put out any more books in that genre, or whatever it might be. But
most of us take it pretty personal when somebody's rejected us. When really, as you just pointed out, there's a number of other reasons why their material gets rejected at a particular point in time.
And I think if they have a manuscript that they have really improved and they really think it fits that particular publisher, then I would maybe just send a query letter and let them know, what's happened with it, what specific changes have been made, and ask if they would be interested in seeing it again. And that way, kind of stick your foot in the door and see if they close the door on it, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea, to do a letter rather than trying to get them to look at the proposal or the manuscript again.
Yeah.
And what... So a number of people here ask about self-publishing here. What do you think about that? I mean, here's somebody that wrote they've independently published their first novel. They want to do the second one. Should they stay with the same publisher? Should they go into debt to try to keep selling the first? What do you think they do?
Well, the whole self-publishing thing has changed over the years. Since when I first started writing, nobody self-published. It was sort of the kiss of death, that was only the terrible books that got self-published.
Sure.
But over the years, I think because there are so many more writers out there that have good manuscripts and not really enough publishers to publish them all, that self-publishing is a viable option. But what it comes down to is whether you're able to sell the books yourself, because it becomes then your full responsibility to get those books out. And with fiction particularly, it's more difficult because you don't have a specifically defined market like you do hopefully with nonfiction. And so it's a sort of an ongoing battle. So I would say if you have published one book and you're not able to sell it or not sell it at the rate that you need to earn back your investment in it, then I don't know that I would invest in a second one. But if you've done well with the first one and have been able to sell it and have sort of developed your own niche market for it, then if it looks like you're going to be able to sell another title, then certainly go ahead for that. But it's a very difficult and can be very expensive, and I'm sure those people know who have done that. It does take that upfront investment of money and then the investment of time and those contacts to sell it once the book is published.
And what in your view, Sally, is a successful self-published book? What type of numbers does that range to?
Well, I don't deal as much with self-published books, so I would guess it's a question of whether they're able to sell the number that they have published. But I would think they would probably want to sell 1,000 copies or more. It probably depends on the type of book as it is as well. But
yeah, it would. That's good. I don't want to put you on the spot here. I'm just trying to get some ranges for people to give them some ideas what could happen. And then when it comes to just general marketing, there's a lot of people have asked questions about what's their best strategy. They've got a book out. What's the best thing they can do to market that book? Is it social media? Is it blogging? Is it speaking? What is it?
I would say yes. Yes to all of those. These days, publishers really are looking for what they're calling platform. which is basically if you're able to speak on the topic and sell books at the back of the room, you know, that's a big help. A lot of writers now are developing blogs. Even fiction writers are doing blogs where they do some very creative things, like talking about what their characters are doing between books, or how their character is celebrating the holidays, or things like that. Just keep keeping people interested in and waiting for that next book. Of course, they're using Facebook and Twitter and any of that social media, I think, all helps, particularly if you're doing things that draw in potential readers and keep them interested and helping you, waiting to buy your next book, and also helping spread the word to their friends and relatives that, you know, this book is out there and they ought to be buying it. So a lot of those things help. I actually have a couple of books in, I have an online bookstore, and I have a couple of books that include a lot of ways to distribute and, you know, get your self-published, either self-published or even royalty-published books. It's become a lot of the work of the author, even of a royalty book, to get their book out there and get it promoted. So, you know, those books like that that give you lots of creative ideas can be very helpful too.
Yeah, it's all about exposure and consistently talking to people about your book, and that's one of the things that most of us as writers, unfortunately, are reluctant to do.
And we don't like to toot our own horn, and but I guess you have to figure if you don't toot it, nobody else is going to. So
that's right.
And
that's
had writers writers who are good at it, you know, remind me that if you know, if you don't care enough about the message of your book to get it out there, then, you know, nobody else is going to. And, you know, why have you bothered to write it if you're not willing to let people know that it's there so that it will help them in whatever they're dealing with?
Now, Katie asked, how important is it for me to have a website or a blog and or a blog?
Well, I think it's important. I hear a lot of writers say, well, as soon as I get this book published, I'm going to, you know, set up my website or start my blog. But editors are tending to think you need to do that while you're working on the book, to start building that potential readership and getting your name out there. And so I think it is very important and should be done as soon as you have something to say, I guess.
Yeah.
But just talking about the topic of your book or you know, something about the plot or whatever, just to get people interested and draw them in, will be very helpful in selling books and in selling your book to an editor, that they know that you have some online presence and are building up that reputation.
So blogging might be an answer for Jan here, who asked, what's the first step for a writer with no platform to begin to build a platform for their nonfiction book?
Yeah, I think, you know, whatever topic that nonfiction book is dealing with, you're writing it because you believe that someone needs to learn what you've learned, or that you have something to say that is going to help them. So start talking about those things on the blog and offering tips or resources or just things that will draw people in that are struggling with whatever that particular situation happens to be, and giving them some answers. I think people are, you know, looking to blogs for answers and inside information and all those kinds of things that are going to help them deal with whatever their particular struggle happens to be.
And when, you know, we've gotten a number of questions here about some I would say politically incorrect kind of topics. Ginger says, I would like to speak to church audiences about a subject that's politically incorrect, homosexuality. What's the best way to word this to a pastor so that she's not immediately dismissed?
Well, I think the pastor's going to have to know where she's coming from on the topic. I mean,
sure.
What is the message that she has? You know, where is she coming from? What is her relationship to the topic?
Mm-hmm.
What qualifies her to speak on that particular topic? So, and sometimes it's a matter of, you know, rather than speaking to the whole church, you know, speaking to the women's group or the men's group or, you know, some interest group within the church. And then if that is successful, then perhaps expanding it to something for the whole church.
Yeah, no, that's good. And what Evelyn asked, what with all the e-book readers, how is marketing to traditional Christian publishers going to be affected?
Well, I wish I knew. I think we're all wishing we knew.
Let's look into your crystal ball there, Sally.
Yeah.
How are you doing on that today? So.
Yeah, I think definitely, you know, things are changing, and you know, the e-book thing is definitely catching on, and a lot of the publishers are realizing that and developing, you know, the e-book lines and putting some of their other books into e-books. I thought when e-books started that it was going to be something like the, you know, some of the old discs and the things that we have used over the years that have sort of come and gone, but definitely it seems to be catching on. And I thought, my first thought was that writers would never go for e-books. We like to have those books in our hand, but I find that writers and editors and agents are some of the biggest fans of e-books. So I think we're going to have a difficult time sort of predicting what's going to happen with that, but I think it's probably the future of publishing in a lot of ways, simply because of the much less expensive than, you know, developing a printed book. So.
It is. I still like the old printed book, though. So
yeah, I do too.
So the old guy here saying
yeah.
that, but I am not. Even though I sell e-books as well, I'm just not a big big e-reader kind of guy. So. I don't think we have to worry, though, do you, Sally, that printed books are going to be going the way of dinosaurs or anything here?
So. No, I don't think so either.
We want to make sure that the people listening to this call, either on the replay or if you're listening to it on the live teleseminar here, that you see that big button that's there that says about the Christian Writers Market Guide and that you get your copy of the 2011 Christian Writers Market Guide because of all the new information and all the changes that are in there. And then also, you know, go to Sally's website and sign up to get on the regular list of people that subscribe to this market guide and get it every single year and mark it up and use the information that's in it year after year. What a terrific tool. And you work on this all year long, don't you, Sally?
Well, off and on, yeah. It takes about, you know, 4 months of day and night work up
wow.
to the deadline. But I'm always collecting all year. I'm collecting, you know, new publishers. And at this point, I have a good number of publishers I've never heard of contact me and want to know how they can get in the guide. So it's always a matter of, you know, tracking down those people and gathering the information and, you know, doing what it takes, sort of preliminary work to, when I get down to that last 4 months, to produce the final product.
Wow. What a huge effort, year after year after year, to do this and put it together. We really appreciate it, Sally. It's just, it's an amazing, amazing tool. Now, we haven't talked too much about children's books and children's literature. What can you tell us about that in the Christian market?
Well, there is you know, the children's books have a number of categories for those in the market guide, and I think one of the things that a lot of people tend not to recognize about writing for children is that you can't write books or articles or stories just for children. They have to be geared to a certain age group. And that's very often somebody will write a, you know, delightful story, but it, you know, maybe the plot is too old for the vocabulary or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that you recognize the different areas. I mean, there are, of course, picture books. There are first chapter books. There are, I think I have a section for children's devotionals. Of course, there are magazines that use both fiction and nonfiction. Those Sunday school take-home papers tend to use, that's one of the best markets for short fiction, is the Sunday school take-home papers for both children and adults, that they all tend to have a short fiction story in them. And so it's, forgot where I was going with that, that sentence.
Well, that's okay. I mean, there's somebody who was asking, did Christian book publishers publish children's counting books, like with photos of agriculture, you know, for example?
Well, I think they like, you know, these days there's sort of the push to be green, and so they're wanting to have books that are environmentally sound and encourage children to you know, be stewards of the earth and so forth. So there is a market for that. With children's books, just like with the others, it's important to you know, study, you know, get catalogs for the publishers that do publish children's books to see the type of books that they publish and try to find those publishers that would fit that. And I think there are some that do have that, you know, sort of a nature thrust to them, that they like books that are nature-related and environmentally sound and so forth. So there is a, you know, fairly good market for children's books. It tends to fluctuate. Sometimes I know children's writers, and they'll say, you know, things are really hot right now. I'm just selling, you know, selling a lot of books, and the publishers really seem to be open. And then the next time I talk to them, they said they can't sell anything. So it's just a matter of sort of getting into the cycle, I guess, and keeping up with what's happening with the children's market.
Yeah, I think it is very cyclical. I agree with you there. And like somebody wrote here, I have a children's fantasy book that's 3/4 finished, and I'm working on a proposal. Is it best to have the book totally done before sending in the proposal?
Well, with fiction, the publisher is going to want to see the finished manuscript. The same with an agent. They both want to see the, particularly with fiction. Nonfiction, sometimes you can sell with, you know, just a proposal, particularly if you've had, you know, a good track record. But with fiction, they want to see the complete manuscript. Because they want to, you know, you might have a great idea, but they don't know whether you can pull it off or not. So they want to make sure that you can, you know, carry the plot to the end and tie up all the loose ends and so forth.
Yeah, and it's really a bad deal when some publisher contracts a novel with somebody and they don't know how to end it. That's just, and you may think that's a fantasy, but I have heard over and over of people doing that kind of thing. So that makes them real reluctant unless you finish the whole book. You know, there's just a lot of questions. People always want to talk too. They ask, do Christian publishers exist to accept crossover writing? Yeah, do we know what that is, Sally?
Well, I think by crossover writing they mean books that would cross over into the general market, the secular market. And over the years, it's been kind of almost funny to watch it, because when I first started writing, there was this big push. Every time we went to a conference, it said, you know, all the editors were talking about finding crossover books. They wanted books that would get into the general market. And then after a few years, that really didn't happen back then. And so then they say, well, there's no such thing as a crossover book. And so then they quit trying to do it, and then Frank Peretti and some of the others came along and proved that there was such a thing as a crossover book. So, but what I've seen happen is that it tends not to be something they plan. I think some, you know, there may be some publishers who are trying to plan those crossover books after seeing what has been successful. But generally, they're things that you know, the Lord or whoever, you know, spurs into that market just because they're fitting a great need in the general public. So it's probably a publisher would not take a book that you were submitting to them as a crossover book. Just write a very good book, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, and if it's good enough and meets human needs, then chances are it will cross over.
Yeah, well, that's one of the keys right there, what you said, just to write a good book, and that people have to sort of find that message that's in their own heart, and how do they match that message where they're going with what's in the market guide? How do they put that together?
Well, those topical listings, like we talked about, that lists all kinds of different topics.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is to find the topic, and obviously I can't have a topic in there for every possible topic, but I tell people to look for topics that are similar to theirs, that would sort of fall in the same category, and you could say that, well, if they are open to this topic, they would probably be open to mine as well. Sometimes you can do sort of a cross categorization of them and pick up two or three topics that are similar to yours, or maybe deal with different aspects of your particular book and sort of cross-reference those and see which publishers show up on all, you know, on two lists or even three lists. Excuse me, and those would tend to be maybe the best markets for your particular topic. So, but those topical listings are so critical to sort of honing in on the top or the publishers that are going to fit what you have to sell.
Because part of the whole purpose of the Christian Writers Market Guide here is to make sure that writers really are targeting their submissions, whether it's a publication like a magazine or a book, that they send it to the right place. Isn't that's sort of the foundation of what you've got going here, right?
Yes, it is. And I have publishers, over the years, I've had publishers, particularly when I first started doing it, the guide, I would have publishers say, well, take us out of the guide because these people, you know, are not paying any attention and they're not sending us the right thing. And so, but over the last few years, I've gotten almost none of those because people are tending to work harder to match their material to the right publisher. Publishers get very upset about manuscripts that come that are obviously, I mean, you know, every manuscript is not going to be accepted, but that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be in the right category. I mean, it should be something that could be accepted. It just doesn't happen to fit what they need at the current time. They are not happy at all when they get manuscripts that are not anywhere close. And they will tell you they get hundreds of them every year that, you know, somebody just picked out a name at random or a name they've heard of somewhere and, sent off a manuscript. And my favorite one was when Jerry Jenkins was an editor at Moody Magazine. He got a manuscript on how to wash your dog. So we tried to figure out if there was some conservative evangelical way to wash a dog, but we decided probably not what the author had in mind, but that's the kind
not.
Of thing they get is something that just is just totally off the wall as far as what a Christian publication or a publication with a particular niche that something really needs to fit what they're after.
Wow. Well, we've really run through it here, and if you have not ordered your copy of the Christian Writers Market Guide, you really need to do that because of the massive amount of information which changes and new information and all kinds of things that are on this in this guide each and every year. So I want to really encourage you to get your own copy and to get on that subscription list so that it comes every year and you're able to get it on a regular basis. Sally, do you have some closing thoughts or something that you'd really like to say to people? I mean, I've heard you say here that people aren't persistent enough. How can people increase their targeted submissions and their persistence? What do they need to do?
Well, I think spending the time, you know, since marketing is my deal, this is probably what you would expect me to say, but the marketing is such an important part of selling your writing. It even helps if you don't have a lot of things written. You know, some people say, well, I probably don't need the market guide until I'm ready to sell. Well, if you don't have the market guide, you don't have the access to the guidelines and those things that you need to know what to write. And it needs to be written to the needs of a particular publisher. So it's so important that you know who you're writing for before you sit down and write, so that you're writing something that has the right slant, that's the right length, would have the right tone, that would fit the needs of a particular publication. You need to know what those publications are about. You know, as we said, seeing the sample copies and the writer's guidelines. A lot of those guidelines now are available on their websites as well. And the, one of the new features that I added to the market guide this year was if any of you have gone looking for those writer's guidelines on the website, sometimes they're very difficult to find. They're down several layers, and so one of the things that's in the guide is instructions, the step-by-step to where you can get to those writer's guidelines. But spend time with those and be finding your markets first, so that you're writing things that, that fit, rather than, as I mentioned earlier, making that dress and going door to door, because that's what happens if you write a piece and then try to find some place that fits. It may be a great manuscript, but if it doesn't fit anywhere, you're not going to sell it. So that spending time on the marketing side of things is so critical if you really want to sell what you're writing. And if you don't sell it, then it's not going to bless anybody. So it's important that you get your the material out there if you're being led to write whatever it might be.
Yeah, boy, that's really such sound advice for people, that they need to get it. They need to write the things that the market wants, but also send it to the right place so that it can truly get through the system and show up in print.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a great resource, and what a just a great effort, Sally, that you've made over the years. And I just want to thank you on behalf of the Christian writing community for your ongoing effort to put together such a stellar book here every year that they can turn to.
Well, it's been my joy to do it. I love writers and writing and being in contact with writers, and the guide has done that.
Yeah, it's given you that chance year after year. And so is Tyndale, what where's the future of the writer's guide going? What can you tell us about that? Is it going to continue with Tyndale for now?
Yes, it is, and their plan is to put it online at some point with updates and that sort of thing. So,
oh, wow.
So that's something for us to look forward to.
Absolutely. We wouldn't want it to stay standing still, definitely. Wouldn't want that to happen. So I want to thank you, Sally, for taking the time. I know there's many, many questions that we didn't get answered here, but we certainly gave a good run at it with all the information that people gave us, and they can get a ton of information by just taking their own Christian Writers Market Guide, studying that information, and then using it in a proper kind of way.
Yes, that's true.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate this, I'm going to launch my end music here, and I thank you all for coming, and we'll catch you on another session here.